Hello again. Thanks for allowing me back over here again so soon. A long time ago, back in about maybe 1968, I decided it was time to flee the coop, and I left home from Jackson, Mississippi, went down to New Orleans, Louisiana, to get a job and pay my own way. Operating on a shoestring budget, as young men will do. One thing I discovered real quickly is money, like water, evaporates real quickly. So I was, as I said, operating on a shoestring budget, and before that first paycheck came around, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm running out of money. Well, another funny thing about money is I discovered that people who don't have it use the word a lot. And people who have it never use the word. They'll say funds, assets, liquidity, everything but money. But I didn't have it, and I thought about it a lot. So I decided, well, I've got to do something here, because this is getting to be a serious problem. I know what I'll do. I'll do what so many other people have done throughout history. I'll live on bread and water till that next paycheck comes. That's not too hard. I can handle that. Went to the store and got a jug of water and a great big loaf of Wonder Bread. And for several days I was eating bread and water. And it didn't take long to figure out, oh, something's missing here. Just what it is, I'm not sure. And got hungrier and hungrier, and then I read the label on the bread. Oh, wow, this is interesting. And I started to bring a label with me to read to you, but I just decided I didn't want to scare you too badly. So I discovered that if you want to live on bread and water, you got to do a little research and find out what good bread is, what bread will sustain you. Back during the times that we are celebrating in this period of our annual observances, they had really good bread, good wheat bread, barley bread. So that would sustain a person. It didn't have a lot of additives and didn't have a lot of things taken out of it. So it was nourishing, healthy bread. And speaking of living on bread, something else came to mind, the scripture in Deuteronomy chapter 8. Let's turn to that, please. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Let's begin at verse 1, 1 through 3. Every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you in the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. Well, that got me to thinking, if you're going to try to live on bread, you got to get some good quality bread, something that's going to give you strength and health and energy. Now, if you're going to try to live on the word of the Lord, our Creator, you got to make sure you have good words. You got to make sure you have His words. No substitutes will work. No false translations, no imaginations. You just got to have His word, His thoughts, if that's what He wants us to think. And down through the years, it's been a long time since this is really, these concepts have been written down. So it's gone through a lot of language changes, a lot of cultural changes, a lot of translational changes, definitions change. So we have to be careful about what we are getting in our words, to make sure they mean what they're supposed to mean. it's not too difficult, if we aren't careful, to be led astray. Let's look at John chapter 17. Important statement there. John chapter 17. Verse 17. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. So, it's our Creator's word that is truth, not the other words that have sometimes been placed in the place of His words. And it's the words that... the false words there that can lead us astray. It's those that we have to be mindful of, and we have to pay a lot of attention to make sure we understand which those are and how to avoid them and to put the right words in the right place. So let's review some of the examples of word study to see the importance and significance of such a study. This can be very important to our lives and our well-being. For our first word that we're going to examine, it's a word that you're familiar with. No surprises. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 2:7. Genesis 2:7. You've read this many times. Chapter 2, verse 7. Genesis 2:7, and the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. Well, that's what my Revised Standard Version says, but my mother's old King James Version says, and man became a living soul. Not so. Not quite so. I looked up in my handy-dandy Webster's Collegiate Dictionary to see just what a soul is. And I'll tell you what it's told me. Webster's. Soul. An entity which is regarded as being the immortal or spiritual part of the person and having no physical or material reality. Is credited with the function of thinking and willing, and hence determining all behavior. Well, that's nothing like the word that is actually there. The word, the Hebrew word that's there in the place of soul, as you know, is nefesh. Nefesh. It has a very simple meaning. Quick to grasp. Nefesh is a breathing creature. That's a very, very physical definition. A breathing creature. That's what the Creator created there. Not a spiritual, non-material critter. So there's much contrast between the English and the Hebrew definitions of that word there. We need to be aware of that because it has great significance in our understanding. Much of the Christian professing world believes in that concept of the soul. As such, it probably leads them into wrong understanding. It can prevent them from understanding the Creator's true truth that He wants us to believe. Now, interesting thing about this word nefesh, it occurs over 400 times in the Bible, and it is translated as soul in the Old King James Version. Now, I don't know about other translations or newer translations. It's probably still used in there somewhere, I would guess. Also in the King James Version, there are over 28 different English terms used to translate this one Hebrew word, nefesh. So there are a lot of different words that don't mean a breathing creature that are used to translate this word nephesh. This requires attention. We have to be alert in our study. Just find out just what's going on here. Are we being deceived or are we learning truth? English, the English word soul, has no Hebrew equivalent. If you tried to translate from English to Hebrew, the word soul or the concept of body and soul, it can't be done. There is no equivalent concept in Hebrew. So soul, the word soul is not consistent with truth. It is not a word that proceeds from the mouth of our Creator. It is not a concept that we can live by. So we can scratch the concept of soul out of our repertoire of things that we depend on, like Wonder Bread. Okay, another interesting example in the Bible, a word that's good for study, is in Mark chapter 6. Let's look at that, please. Mark 6. Mark 6, verse 56. Whenever he, that's Yeshua, the one we call Jesus, whenever he entered into villages, cities, or the country, they begged him, Whenever he entered into the villages, cities, and country, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him, Jesus, that they might touch the border of his garment. And as many as touched him, they were made well. Well, what did these broken, dilapidated, sick people know that we may not know? They knew something that was going to, they had a lot of faith in it that it was going to make them well. And it is recorded that it worked. So let's look at what it is they were trying to touch. They might just touch the border of his garment. That's an interesting word right there. The border comes from, that word border is translated from the Greek word kraspedon. Kraspedon. We'll come back to that in just a few minutes. But before we get further into that, let's look at Malachi chapter 4, verse 2. Expand the what we're talking about here a little bit. Get another look at it. Malachi chapter 4, verse 2. But to you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall arise with healing in his wings. Now, that word wings, with healing in his wings. That word wings is significant there. It comes from, let's see. It comes from the Hebrew word kanaf, kanaf, K-A-N-A-P-H. And it can be translated as wings or corners. It means extremities. It can be used in military activities, talking about the extremities of the army, the extremities of a piece of clothing. It's interesting that the clothing that they typically wore at that time would be a big rectangular piece of cloth with a hole in the middle, like a poncho. They put it on, it goes down, they take a belt and wrap it around them, and then they have four corners down at the bottom. And it's referring to those four corners at the bottom. The the corners there, kanaf, the same word that is translated wings there in Malachi 4:2, and it is translated from the Hebrew into the Greek and into the word borders. Let's look one more time before we go back to Matthew 6. Let's look at Numbers chapter 15. Numbers 15. Verses 38 through 40. Verse 37. Again, the Lord spoke to Moses, "Speak to the children of Israel. Tell them to make tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and to put a blue thread in the tassels of the garment." And you shall have the tassels that you may look upon it and remember the commandments of the Lord and do them, and that you may not follow the harlotry to which your own heart and your own eyes are inclined, that you may remember and do all the commandments and be holy for your Lord. Now, this is really interesting because this gets into the idea, this gets into the reality that the way of thinking of the Greeks was very different from the way of thinking of the Hebrews. The Hebrews were a very concrete people. The Greeks were very abstract. To the Hebrews, this term, what we call the tassels, comes from the Hebrew word. It's a real strange word. I get a kick out of it. Tsitsits. I'm going to spell it. T-S-I-Y-T-S-I-Y-T-S. It's almost as strange as Mississippi. But this comes from the Hebrew root word tsits, and that means a blossom. So a blossom has a function. The Greeks look at this as a reminder. The Hebrews look at it as something with a function. The function of the blossom is to produce fruit. And that's what we are encouraged to do all through the Bible. Produce fruit. In fact, in James it tells us, you're familiar, that it says faith without works is dead. So we've got to have works. We've got to produce fruit. From the beginning to the end of this book, it tells us we've got to produce fruit. And here it's pointed out in the function of this concept of the blossoms. So, now thinking back, going kind of backwards from here, in Malachi chapter 4, verse 2, but to you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in his wings or corners. The corners is where he has his tassels, his mental. Let's see. I'm not a Hebrew, so I'm used to the thinking the way we think in Mississippi. It's from the blossoming, the function of the blossoming producing fruit. That's what they thought, the way they looked at it. So the injured, the invalids that were on the cots that were put in the pathway in the marketplace that wanted to touch the borders, they were reaching out to touch this tzitzit, because they knew this is the fruit of his righteousness. They wanted to touch the fruit of his righteousness. And this particular individual was never short of the fruit of righteousness. It's not like us, where we might have ups and downs. This was our Creator, full of righteousness. And they're just touching it. Could make them whole and healthy and extend their life. So these are true words that produce life and health and well-being for those who touched the tzitzits. There's a lot of, I have no idea how many, a great number of Hebrew words that really require our attention. There's a Hebrew word, nantan, N-A-N-T-A-N, means to give. Very simple concept, to give. It's translated into 76 different English words that do not, only a few of them mean to give. I started to write them all down and tell you, but I don't think you want me to do that. It might be interesting for you to look it up. It's not that hard to find. But 76 different words for this one Hebrew word, nantan. So we can see that that is an example of the shortcomings of our language. I love our language. It's the only one I've got. And I know fairly well how to use it, but it's got the shortcomings. The English vocabulary is, in fact, and the English vocabulary and its definitions are very inadequate for conveying the meaning of Hebrew words. This is a quote from a book titled A History of Hebrew, Its Language and Philosophy by Jeff A. Benner, B-E-N-N-E-R. I'm going to read something else to you from that book. I've read it to you before, but I think it is so important that we really need to be aware of it, be reminded of it. In this book, he quotes from an article from December 2006 issue of the New Yorker magazine that published an article titled The Good Book Business, which stated, "The familiar observations that the Bible is the best-selling book of all time obscures a more startling fact. The Bible is the best-selling book of the year every year. This is an intensely competitive business. Every year, Nelson Bible executives analyze their product line for shortcomings, scrutinize the competition's offerings, and talk with customers, retailers, and pastors about their needs. In short, the translating and printing of Bibles is big business." In the world of consumerism, it is the producer's primary objective to offer a product that appeals to the consumer. For this reason, a translation is required to conform to the buyer's expectations. If a Bible is published that does not conform to the buyer's expectation, even if it is more accurate, it will not sell. For this reason, we must be willing to do our own investigations into the meaning and interpretations of the text. So that is a real good warning to me. We've got to study that word which our Creator wants us to understand so that we can live. As I mentioned earlier, as I was trying to live on bread, it takes some preparation and some study, and you have to understand what's going on. A good, wholesome piece of bread should get all of your digestive juices working because it should provide everything that you need for life. And we are told that we can't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. Unfortunately, some of these words have been distorted and perverted. so that they don't give us the message that he originally intended. We're not getting the right words. We're not getting the right thoughts. We're not getting the message. I've got some good warnings here for you. Let's look at Philippians chapter 2. I never looked at this as a warning before, but let's look at it. Philippians chapter 2. Verse 16. Chapter 2, Philippians, verse 16. Holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I, excuse me, verse 16. Holding fast in the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. Now, wouldn't it be a bummer if we got to the end of our life and we all of a sudden realize, oh no, that's all been in vain. I haven't done what's right. I haven't understood truth. I haven't lived by true concepts. What a waste of my life. We wouldn't want that to happen. So by studying the words that our Creator gives us for the purpose of getting through life, that will help us to complete our task successfully. Another good warning and a marvelous promise. Let's look at John chapter 14, please. John chapter 14. John chapter 14, verse 23. Jesus answered and said to him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him." Well, let's look at this again with a little more attention to some of the individual words. And Jesus answered and said to him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word." Oh, there's that word again, word. He will keep. Suppose we have the wrong words. We don't understand the words that we're supposed to be keeping. We're keeping other words. Well, it says here, if we keep his word, the Father and, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him. So, if we are keeping the right words, if we understand the message, or if that's the message that we've devoted our life to and are living by, then we are not only showing our love for the Jesus and the Father, but they will love us. What a wonderful reward and promise that is. And continue on, please. And we will come to him and make our home with him. But if we don't have the right words, he won't come to us and will not make his home with us. So we've got to have the right words if we want to take this seriously. Now, if it doesn't really matter, you don't have to put that much energy or attention or thought to it. But you'll end up with white bread. So do get busy. Do get to studying words. It can be very rewarding, and it can be a lot of fun.